A good devolver. We'll move on to the next stage of our discussion from last week. If you weren't with us last week, it shouldn't be a problem because it's really different stages of the picture. We mentioned last week that the Gemara pinpoints four key places, call it stages of the Megillah. This is reflected in the Machlokes between the Tanaim, which is considered the critical part of the Megillah that you have to read in order to be Yotze. I mean, you have to read enough to really get the picture, the critical picture that you have to come away with. And here we had a Machlokes, four opinions. We all know that you have to hear the whole thing, and that's because we follow the opinion that says that it's critical to hear from the beginning of Ahasuerus's grandeur that we discussed last week, why that's so critical. But let's run through the four shittos again and then move on to this week's part of the discussion. So the four shittos are, well, moving from least to most. The four shittos are, first opinion says, you have to start from Balailahu. Balailahu is really where things start happening. Call it the climax. Then you have the next opinion that says you have to start from where Haman enters the scene. That's, without that, you've missed a critical part of the Megillah. The next shita says you have to start from where Mordechai enters the scene. Without that, you're missing a critical part of the Megillah. And then we have the shita that we follow that says the whole thing. Last week, we discussed the first two opinions. Why is Ahasuerus such a critical part of the message of the Megillah? And why is Mordechai such a critical part of the message of the Megillah? Now we'll move on to the next two parts. Haman. Haman was saying that you have to start the story from where Haman moves on to the scene. Otherwise, you're missing a critical piece. What is the critical nature of Haman's picture on the scene? And maybe I already indicated this last week, but last week we said that, we discuss Ahasuerus part, we're really getting to the heart of it. Then I said that when we talk about the Mordechai part, we're really getting to the heart of it. We're talking about multiple hearts here. But yes, when you move on to Haman, you're really getting to the heart of it. I'm coming straight. I think a number of the Olam here also coming straight from a shiur from Rabbi Yitzchak Breidowitz. So actually, I'm going to be elaborating on, this will be an elaboration on something that he touched on. Haman is a key part of the story. Why? Haman was, again, one of those classic anti-Semites. There have been many of them throughout the generations, and there are still plenty of them around. Just that he was one of those who was actually in position to really do something significant with it, do something very significant with it, right? He was actually in position to be able to impose a Holocaust on the Jewish nation. Many anti-Semites would like to, but most are not in position. And then every so often in history, we had to contend with those who are more in position to do things. And Hashem foils his plot. But we have to view him as a key picture of the story. And that really brings us to the understanding that the story is not just about the happy ending, but a very key part of the story was actually the tzara. And here we're going to bring in what's really one of the central themes of the Megillah. We've mentioned a few times something that Reb Shlomo Brevda says, and I think this is a very, it can either be taken in this as an isolated vart or as another Pesach, as another opening to one of the really deeper essences of what's going on in the Megillah. Reb Shlomo Brevda asks a question when you hear it should be like an obvious question. What does it say in the Megillah? What did Mordechai do when he heard about the decree? It says, "Vayilbash sakva efer," he put on sackcloth and ashes, and he went and he cried a bitter cry. Now, there's something else that we know that Mordechai did that doesn't say in the Megillah, but we've heard about it from time beginning, since I think kindergarten was the first place I heard about that. What did Mordechai do immediately when he heard about the decree? What was the first thing he did? Went to the school children. Went to the school children and asked, they wanted to get an idea of what's going on in Hashemayim. So he asked them, please tell me, what pasuk did you learn today? Doesn't say that in the Megillah. We know that from our oral sources of what was going on at the time. So he has three different school children. Each one told him a pasuk of Hashem's going to make things work. Hashem is going to work it out. Three reassuring pasukim. So hey, I have the obvious question. If he was told that immediately, basically he was told everything is going to be fine. So why did he go on with the sackcloth and ashes? Now you might say, well, maybe that happened before. No, but we see that afterwards, he went straight with the sackcloth and ashes, right? It says that Esther tried to get him to come in. He wouldn't take off the sackcloth and ashes. He was with the sackcloth and ashes going forward pretty much until the nace actually happened. Which is why we make a big deal. I'll just throw that in parentheses. You're supposed to wear Shabbos clothing on Purim. I guess if you're not wearing a costume, if you're wearing a costume, okay, that's the Koid Hayoim. But you're supposed to wear Shabbos clothing on Purim. It's important to realize that. And there's a number of deep significances to that, besides the general concept of that. It's a Yom Kodesh, you know, want to be Mechabed the Yom. But one of the reasons that we wear Shabbos clothing is to commemorate the stark difference that we saw by Mordechai. Mordechai went from sackcloth and ashes to Mordechai Yotzam Lifnei HaMelech B'Levush Malchus. He came out wearing Mamash Bedekt in a whole royal outfit. And we wear Shabbos clothing to also bring that out. So, Shlomo Brevda says as follows. He says a very, very profound point that is so relevant and something that we've discussed often, this theme. That is the ability to see beyond the way things are playing out in a material way and connect to the spiritual dynamic. We've said many times, particularly these days, that Tzara for Klal Yisrael is a call from Hashem. That I expect you to turn to me in tefillah now, and I expect you to engage in tshuva, in improvement. It's always the way to relate to a Tzara. Certainly never to write off a Tzara as caused by bad politics, etc., etc. A Tzara to Klal Yisrael is something that Hashem orchestrated because of his plan for Klal Yisrael. The Jewish people as a whole are never just the subject of haphazard, bad coincidences, etc. Now, could there be deeper reasons? Yes. But you're always right if you say, why is this happening? Because Hashem wants to wake us up. You're always right. For a person to just come and say, we have no idea why Hashem is doing things, is a frum-sounding denial. That's what it is. Rabbi Avigdor Miller actually used sharper terms for that. He said it's a frum nusach of apikorsis. But it's a righteous-sounding denial. We don't know the full extent of it. We don't know the full extent of it. There's always deeper reasons. But we always know the initial purpose, and the initial purpose is to bring us closer to Hashem, to elevate us, to wake us up, period. So now,
what's the difference between saying we don't know why Hashem is doing this, to he's doing this to wake us up, but we don't know what he wants us to wake up to? I mean, that seems pretty much the same thing.
We do know what he wants us to wake up to.
Okay.
Yes, meaning the that is the beauty of what the Rambam does. We've mentioned this Rambam a few times, that it's always within reach. When people start getting to the more esoteric levels of what exactly is the precise reason, pinpointing, there we say, okay, come on, it's hit or miss. You know, it's a shot in the dark. But what we do say is it's a call for tefillah, and it's call for introspection and improvement. What should you improve in? You'll figure it out, like you say, Levi Yodea Maras Nafshei. Don't figure out what the community needs to improve in. That we leave, sometimes our greater people will come and tell us that. And yes, they have a sense for it. But as far as we're concerned, each of us, we say, Levi Yedea Moras Nafsho. Hashem wants a more elevated, greater Jewish people. How do I contribute to a more elevated, greater Jewish people? Not by figuring out everybody else's problems, but by turning inward and say, I'm going to contribute to that effort, a greater, more elevated me in the core areas where I need to improve. Question.
Often the time of the life that a lot of it, every time I have used to go to him and ask what you just can you take on, what's going on. The same question, we want to get something very specific. He always spoke in generality, more tefillah, better tefillah, improve your tefillah, women should improve their modesty, the general. And everyone's like, kind of like roll their eyes, oh, again, you know.
People didn't like the boring answers. People wanted something esoteric. Light 17 candles, right, on your counter. I don't have to worry about talking more nicely. I don't have to worry about relating better to the people around me. I don't have to worry about anything hard. Just light those 17 candles. That's right. Reb Chaim often disappointed people with answers like, Davin, come on, give me something fun. But that's right. It boils back to the core things, the core things. And if you're good in the core things, maybe you can be doing them better. Okay, so therefore, Shlomo Brevda says something very profound. He says, when Mordechai saw this tzara, he didn't see Haman. He saw Hashem. Hashem was talking through Haman. And Haman was yelling and screaming and ranting and raving and saying his things. You know, Haman was that megalomaniac, right? Haman, what happened? What happened? One old Jew offended him. So kill him. Ba'ivez be'enov. If you appreciate the crime, only Haman was able to appreciate what an unbelievable crime it was to slight him. And that one person being killed just doesn't do the trick. There's such an unbelievable offense. A nation has to die if someone, you know, hit Haman's ego. Haman's ego can't be satisfied by one person dying. He's Haman, right? He appreciates how great he is, and he's forcing everybody else to act as though they appreciate it, and then he believes it. Right? It's a great trick, right? Order everybody by pain of death to bow down for you, and then say, look, everybody knows how great I am. But it worked, and it works. You know, it does work. So, but Mordechai didn't see all that. Mordechai saw Hashem talking, and what did he hear? He heard Hashem saying, now is the time for tefillah and tshuva. What the future holds for Mordechai was irrelevant. The rest of us, if we would know that everything's going to be fine, it would take off our intensity in approaching the tshuva and tefillah. And that's why Hashem talks in this way. Hashem wants you to approach it with an intensity. But Mordechai didn't actually need that. The fact that there's a tzara hovering over the Jewish people, even though he knew the future through his means, and he knew that it was going to be fine, the fact that there's a tzara, there's a threat hovering over the Jewish people, for him, he hears Hashem's voice saying, now is the time for tshuva and tefillah. Mordechai was able to dedicate himself to tshuva and tefillah with utmost intensity, knowing that there was actually no threat. But the rest of the people couldn't know that, because that would dampen the whole thing. We got an unbelievable 3 days that elevated the Jewish people to a whole different place. I'm not sure if I said this last week. If I didn't say it last week, then I said it last year. And if not, then 2 years ago. But Rabbi Avigdor Miller says that the real story of the Megillah is hidden in the story of the Megillah. I said this last week?
No.
Okay, good. That when Esther says, Lech Knesset Kol HaYehudim, go and fast for me for 3 days. Right? And Mordechai went and did it. It's related in two psukim, and then we go on back into Esther and the party and this and that, right? So the true story of the Megillah is there. Appreciate what those 3 days were. Those 3 days, if you think of the most inspiring Yom Kippurs you've had, if you think of the most inspiring, if you were ever at one of those communal gatherings, if you come out feeling fired up, feeling like a different person, feeling like I'm never going to be the same, or one of those communal tefillahs, etc., this was the height of that. It says that with all the inspiration of the Nevi'im, 48 Nevi'im and 7 Nevi'is who were sent with messages to the whole Jewish people, nobody achieved what Haman did in terms of bringing the Jewish people close to Hashem. So we can't underestimate what a turning point that was in the history of Jewish people in terms of who they were spiritually. They went into those 3 days on a lower, more material level. They came out pure, elevated, great, ready to take on the tekufa of the second Beis HaMikdash. That's really part of the significance of it. Ready to move out into the next stage, out of the galus. That was really what Hashem was trying to get them to. Haman was a means. So Rabbi Avigdor Miller said, the story of the Megillah is, they went into shul, knowing that there is a hopeless reality. The most powerful man in the kingdom set the decree in place, and everybody's going to be eager to carry it out. They went in a hopeless state, and they applied themselves to that tefillah and tshuva for those 3 days. And really, we should elaborate. To just say, for those 3 days, doesn't really give you the impact of what those 3 days were. And they reached those levels, and they responded appropriately, and they came out, and Haman was dangling. That's the story of the Megillah. That's the story of the Megillah. The whole story of Esther operating in the palace is the external packaging that she herself wasn't really banking on. Right? Look at the way she operated. If you're going to the king, you want to present yourself to the king to make the request of your life. You don't go in fasting. I know what I feel like when I fast, especially at the end of 1 day. I never tried 2 days straight. But then I'm not really in position to really make a good argument, to really present myself. And she needs to be appealing to him. But that's not where her mind is. Her mind is in the fasting and so connected to Hashem that the Malach has to come and like push her hand back where it's supposed to be going for the material purposes. So Mordechai was connected to this. And that's why he immediately heard everything's going to be fine. It didn't affect his sackcloth and ashes. Because here's the voice of Hashem saying, now is the time when I want tshuva and tefillah from the Jewish people. In other words, what Haman really was, Haman was a great bracha to the Jewish people. Haman was a great bracha to the Jewish people. Haman was the person who brought the people to the place where Hashem wanted them, reconnected the Jewish people to him, and made it possible to now move into the period of the second Beis HaMikdash, to the next stage in history where Hashem wanted to bring them. The reason that this is so fundamental is because this really is the way to relate to any adversity, to be able to see straight through it, not to see the natural cause and effect, and to just see Hashem talking to us, to see Hashem talking to us and respond in kind. And this is also a message for the whole galus, not just for the whole galus, in all of our personal private lives. And that's why understanding who Haman really was is such a key part of the story. You can't just say, well, we were in trouble and Hashem bailed us out. You'd be missing the point. You'd be missing the point. And that's why we come back and say afterwards, it's supposed to reach a point where you confuse Aror Haman with Baruch Mordechai, right? What does it mean that we confuse the two? It's two opposites. That's not two opposites. Both are getting us to exactly the same place. We have the Jewish leader. In fact, maybe Haman even more powerfully. We're told Haman even more powerfully. You have Mordechai inspiring the people to great heights, and you have Haman, whose purpose and identity is to inspire the Jewish people to great heights. They're both serving the same function. I just heard now, the question asked, and this really brings out the point also. We're told that whenever it says Hamelech in the Megillah, it contains a deeper reference to Hashem, right? Hashem doesn't appear. So why is Hashem being represented in the word Hamelech, Hashverish? Why? Maybe it would be more appropriate that Hashem should be represented by the name Mordechai. It's all coming back to the same point. Mordechai, of course, he's representing Hashem. That's everything he stands for. The point of the Megillah is to be able to see that the evil Haman and the evil / ridiculous Achashverosh are also just to be able to see through them and see in them that they're coming from the same place that Mordechai is coming from, just that Mordechai is coming from it consciously. They aren't. They don't realize that that's the purpose they're serving. That's why Haman is such an important part of the picture. Question.
Oh, why take Kurdish? you have Hamas, who could be, we could say, the current equivalent of Haman. Like, they're a puppet of Hashem. They committed this atrocity to wake the Jewish world up. So we can only do what we individually can do. But, like, back in the days, it's like the whole Jewish community fasted for 3 days. They got woken up. But what do you do with, like, a tiny fraction wakes up, but the rest of the community sleeps?
Let's give a tough and painful question. What happens when there are things that are meant to wake us up and the Jewish people are not in position to be woken up? And it's only going to be a few of them who are really going to hear the words, hear the message, and respond. So let's answer the question, suggest, on two levels. First of all, what we've actually seen now is that the Jewish people is more capable of waking up than we might grant them. Even the people who are not connected, right? We've seen that. Have we seen it all the way across? We're waiting to see it all the way across. But this we did see. Even the people who are further away, even people who don't have that training to be able to immediately plug into it, they too can be reached by these things. So that's number one. Now, as for the question, but is that really what we're waiting to see? Does it all depend on, okay, when will it be intense enough or clear enough that it'll actually reach everybody? Not necessarily. And here's a point that's important to realize. We long to see the Jewish people as a whole, all responding in kind. And if we were to see that, we would see immediate results. We would see immediate results. That's where Hashem operates with his people. We would have a situation of everyone across the board really calling out to Hashem. Hashem responds. That was why we got that response in the name of Shushan, and that was why we didn't necessarily get that response at other stages of history. But that said, we have to appreciate at the end of the day, what we're contributing to that picture is our individual level. Meaning, on the one hand, this is Hashem dealing with the Jewish people as a whole. On the other hand, he's also dealing with each individual. And to approach it from a place of, I know that I'll present Hashem with that one elevated and improved Jew. Or perhaps I can actually be involved in bringing Hashem another four elevated and improved Jews through my talk at home throughout this period. As far as we're concerned, that is the Hatzlacha. That is the Hatzlacha. And we don't know. This is a point that we've made often. We don't really know if it's meant to be accomplished through quantity or quality. This is a very, very important point to realize, particularly. It's such an important message for our time. Yes, back in Shushan, all the Jewish people were in position that if they were just given the right focus, they could all connect. But in our time, it's the understanding that quality can compensate for quantity. And this is what we actually saw in the days of Hanukkah. In the days of Hanukkah, we were in a similar state. Hashem was trying to wake the Jewish people up. Many of them were Hellenizers. Many of them never came back. But those who were attuned dedicated themselves so intensely that Hashem said the Jewish people achieved their role. And this is something that's relevant to us, not just in response to Tzaras, Chalila, but also in general, in terms of the tafkid of our dar. We have to realize that we carry responsibility. That's what it boils down to. We need to be the ones compensating quality for quantity. I said a few times, this is actually reflected in a pasuk. There's a famous pasuk. The beginning of the pasuk is famous. It's a very famous concept in halacha. The more people do a mitzvah together, the more of a glory it brings to Hashem. Everybody knows that part. That's why, it's Lamaisa now, Megillah, you're encouraged to go to as big a minyan as possible. But the continuation of the pasuk is less famous, but so powerful. Hashem gets his glory when there are multitudes serving him. The continuation of the pasuk, if we translate it literally, okay? The multitudes, when there's a multitude, it provides glory for the king. And when there is barely any people, it's the fear of a ruler. The fear of a ruler. Mechitas razoin, the fear of a ruler. Of a ruler as in a king. Razoin is another way of saying melech. Moshe. Simply understood, that means that it's scary for the king if he only has a handful of people serving him. But the Metzudas comes and turns it around and he says, no, we're trying to explain how does the king get his glory. When there are multitudes, it's from the fact that there are multitudes. When there are barely any people, where does he get it from? The intensity of the way they relate to him. They get it from these people. Yes, there are only few, but they hold him in unbelievable awe. That's where the glory comes from in that case. That's the role that we carry in this sense. So that's as far as Haman goes. And now we move on to the next part of the Megillah, which, tell me if this sounds familiar, this is really the heart of it. Okay, I'm saying that for the fourth time in these last 2 weeks. But it's actually true. I'll call it another artery. Not sure if to elaborate a little more on the previous point. Okay, let's move over to the next point. The next point is really bringing this all home. If you think about it, it's really bringing home all the previous 3 points that we discussed. The next point is Balaila Ahu, when things start actually moving, right? Here we get to the good part of the story, right? That's why the Baal Keir, when he reaches this point, he's supposed to punctuate, dramatize those words. Here's where things start turning around. What happens here? From this point further, you suddenly start seeing how up till now, we were under the immense, powerful Persian empire with all of its big powers that be, and there were formidable powers that be, and we're just shrinking into more and more of feeling how helpless we are and how defenseless we are and how in trouble we are. And all of a sudden, one thing after the next, Hashem starts showing, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. Kind of, you're looking at the scene and it's just dark. A light goes on and another light and another light and another light and another light. But not only that, these are suddenly retroactive lights. Suddenly they're retroactive lights. Balayla ahu another doshnas ha-melech. Achashverosh can't fall asleep. And it's exactly at that moment that Haman comes in to suggest that they hang Mordechai. Is exactly when the king is being reminded of something that appeared totally haphazard back then, when Mordechai was the one who happened to hear those two people speaking and happened to know the language. So he happened to be in the right place at the right time. They were confident speaking in their language because nobody around knew it. Mordechai was a member of the Sanhedrin, who had to know all the languages. So he happened to be there. It happened. The king was saved. It was forgotten. History moved on. It was shy to the past. And all of a sudden now, boom, that light is going on. I'm not going to elaborate. We know all the details. But this is the point where really all of a sudden we start seeing, oh, 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 oh. It's a lot of O's happening all over the place. Where Hashem is showing, yeah, you saw a big, powerful Persian empire with the Jewish people just helpless. Now do you see how I manipulated the king's Shalom Bayis issues? And now do you see how Esther being put in that place at that time, right before Haman rose to power? Now do you see how Haman's timing was so precise that he's the one and came and told Achashverosh exactly how he should honor Mordechai? And from there, it just rolls forward. And this is the message that the Megillah is giving us of the great Yisrael that the Ramban says. We have open miracles. But the open miracles are there for the purpose of teaching us to see. Hashem turns on a blinding light for a minute. But now, look to see it in every curve of life. Learn to see wherever it is. It's Hashem interacting with you. Just the way the Ramban puts it is. The great miracles are there to show you, to call your attention to the hidden miracles, which he says, very powerful words, which is how Hashem weaves his conduct of the Jewish people. He weaves it into Teva. There is no Teva. Teva is mamish, like you said before about Haman. It's a certain, Hashem has a certain system in place behind which he's busy poking and pulling and twisting, but it's happening all around you all the time. He's weaving his very personal plan for you, his very personal plan for the Jewish people into that smokescreen called Teva. But it's all him. And this is where we want to start. This is really what we want to come away from from the Megillah, particularly as the Megillah is representing for us the time that we don't see Hashem operating in the open anymore. The Hester is so fundamental because that's the reality that we're in. And what we want to learn to see is that Hashem weaving it into everything and learning to respond to it and to identify it. Sense Hashem behind the very superficial smoke screens of all the different natural events of our life. Respond to things that come up in life as Hashem sending a curveball your way or sending a straight ball your way. I want to see you respond to the good things, to the apparently not such good things. This is all Hashem interacting with me. And just like Mordechai, to see only that, to see only that, to be connected to the Ruchnius, to the Hashem that's behind it. And that's really what brings together all the different points. We talked about Achashverosh last week. What was the big message of Achashverosh? It's to show the Jewish people, it's not just that Hashem is guiding your affairs in a very close-up kind of way, but the affairs of that big, huge empire is all revolving around you, right? That was the point that we said. That's why it's so important to see quite how big this empire was. It wasn't just the local sheriff who Hashem is manipulating because the whole population is Jewish. No, it was 127 provinces under this massive king who has no shaykhus to any Jew. Hashem is busy manipulating everything there around us. It was Haman, right? Haman was coming, the epitome of the enemy of the Jewish people. This is also Hashem drawing the people to him. Where does Mordechai come in? Mordechai was the one who guided the people to be able to see it right, to be able to interpret it right, to be able to see beyond the material level of things and to actually interpret it, to read the spirituality of it as you're moving through it. And here I do want to elaborate a little bit more on this, on how Mordechai showed us how with all the material reality of it, to remain connected to the spiritual dynamic behind it. Right? This began with what we discussed before of the Jewish people here. There's a wicked Haman on the scene. Mordechai doesn't see him. Mordechai hears Hashem saying, I want you to come closer to me. And Mordechai was working to move the Jewish people onto that track because he knew that this is what would get them home. This is what would get them home. If you move through a little bit more of Mordechai's conduct here, which again seems to be so counterintuitive, the Jewish people, starting from the Mishnah, you have to appreciate. I think maybe we said last week, maybe we didn't, I can't keep track anymore. But what was the chait of the Mishnah? The chait of the Mishnah was, what was so bad about it? It was what it reflected. It reflected that the Jewish people had just been cast out of Eretz Yisrael because they were drifting away from Hashem. The purpose of the Churban was to jolt them, to wake them up and say, we better reconnect with him very intensely. And Hashem said, good. Right after the Churban, the Jewish people woke up in shock. They never believed it could actually happen. When it happened, they said, we just want to come back to you. Hashem said, very good. That was the whole point. But I want to see it be sustained. There's always the initial excitement. Can you hold this on? Can you hold this out for 70 years? Then I'll bring you back. It's toward the end of the 70 years that it started drifting and saying, you know what? It was terribly traumatic for us to be, you know, cast out of Eretz Yisrael, to the base of Mikdash destroyed, but there's life after. The Jewish people were in pretty comfortable state in Bavel, in Gullah's Bavel afterwards. They were in positions of power. It wasn't so bad. And they were starting to see, you know what? There is life after. And that heat was starting to cool. And this was reflected in the fact that they're starting to feel comfortable, they're starting to feel an association with the people around them. And for them, it was actually a great achievement. So the king said, I want Jewish presence at my party. Wow, we really made it into the Persian Empire, right? They felt flattered, they felt gratified. The king is recognizing us among his subjects. Even though we're so small and scattered, he wants us here. Okay. You know, we want to connect to this. We want to be a part of this. We want the king to see that we know how to respond in kind. And here comes Mordechai, who can't break out of the old ways of thinking and is telling them, don't. This is dangerous. Why is it dangerous? Because this is exactly what's pulling you in the wrong direction. You have to keep separate. You have to keep feeling like you are foreigners. You cannot start feeling at home. This is exactly the problem. And they understood that he's just not in touch with the current reality. He's just not in touch with it. He doesn't understand how you need to navigate with being under a Persian king. That wasn't his schooling. Okay? And this goes on. Haman walks by. Everybody sees what problems Mordechai is causing by just refusing to relate to him. Right? But this is Mordechai actually being mechaper for the negative direction that he sees the Jewish people going in. For me, Haman is nothing. So nothing that it's not just like come, not just he didn't bow down. It wasn't even like he became alert when Haman walked by. There was just nothing there. That was how Mordechai experienced Haman. Like come v'loizah. It wasn't like, oh, there he is. I'm not getting up. It wasn't even that. It was just like straight, continued what he was doing. This is Mordechai remaining connected to the spiritual dynamic behind him, behind what was going on. What happens further? Okay, you go further along. When the Gezerah actually happens, a few strange things in Mordechai's behavior that don't seem in line with the natural approach to things. First of all, okay, we already discussed how he responded, right? But then what? First of all, he puts on the sackcloth and ashes. Esther sends clothing out for him. She wants him to come into the palace so she can talk to him. Makes a lot of sense. She understands that he's not wearing sackcloth for nothing, right? But she says, let's talk about this. The only way that can work is if you put on normal clothing. Mordechai refuses. What are the Mepharshim? Why does he refuse? Why can't he put on the clothing to go talk to her? The Mepharshim say he was intensely focused on that spiritual dynamic and didn't want to lose that for a minute. He felt that that was more dangerous. If he would let go of the sackcloth and ashes and put on those regular clothing, he would lose the focus. He wanted to stay with the sackcloth and ashes focus, even if that complicates the material efforts that we need to make. We need to make it. He's gonna be guiding it, but he's not letting go of his focus, and therefore he just makes the process more complicated with hasach back and forth and back and forth. The next thing is, he says, "Okay, Esther, you have to go immediately to the king." Esther comes back with a very logical argument. She says, "Going into the king is a death sentence. Going into the king is a death sentence." I haven't been called for a while, which means, the Mepharshim say, it's going to happen any day, right? I'm going to be called any day. Why don't we wait? It'll just be better for the cause, and it'll be better for my life. This way, I'm risking my life and angering the king in the name of the cause. Wait, I'm going to be called, if not in a week, in 2 weeks. Why don't we wait? What was Mordechai's big opposition to waiting? Why couldn't he wait out the next week or two? See, here again, the Mepharshim say a very powerful thing. He understood that on the spiritual level, you have to strike while the iron is hot, meaning as follows. He understood that what we really need now is that tefillah and tshuva that we were talking about before. Okay? This, we all know from human nature, can't afford to wait a week. Why? What happens after a week? They had the shock of the gezeira. After a week, things start settling in. The initial shock isn't there anymore. And that initial shock is a critical piece in the spiritual response. We have to respond when the intensity, when the desperation is at its peak. We can't afford to wait a week. And therefore, we have to start the process rolling now. But what do you mean? On the material front, it's going to be counterproductive. Yeah, but the spiritual front is the more important one. That's where our focus has to be, even if it means doing a sloppy job on the material one. So we're making the full focus rather than the other way around. Let's put all the energies into the material front, the more intuitive front, and we'll try with the spirituality. No, we want the full energies there and a sloppy job on the spiritual, on the material front. And a step further, look how far he took it. What was one of those days? Leila Seder. They skipped the Leila Seder because they were busy fasting. It was so extreme that Mordechai, wait for Chol HaMoed Pesach. No, we can't wait a day. we have to get when the intensity of the response is at its peak, even if it means overriding Pesach. That's why it says in Halacha, by the way, that the first day of Chol HaMoed is an Indian to make a little bit of a bigger Suda to celebrate Haman's Yahrzeit. Haman's Yahrzeit was the, don't learn Mishnayos, I mean, learn Mishnayos, but not Lili Nishmasa. It's always a good idea to learn Mishnayos. But it said that that was his Yahrzeit. He was hung that day. It was those 3 days. Right? He was hung the second day of Pesach. First day of Chol HaMoed. That's what it actually says in Halacha. Add something to your Suda. Celebrate. But this was all, just one moment, this was all that same point. The intense focus on the spiritual dynamic. And Esther, as soon as she appreciated that point, completely threw herself into it. Right? She says, like, I'm going to fast, etc., etc. Question, you're going to ask a question.
Defense. Mordechai was honored with this whole parade. So how did the Am Yisrael see this before the downfall of Mordechai?
Oh. What happened there? And I'm happy you raised that point. Right in the middle of this, this is in the middle of the 3 days of fasting, is that event where this is the second day of the process. Right? The hanging is going to happen. Okay, you know what? We'll figure that out exactly. But it was in the middle of the process, right? In the middle of the process, all of a sudden, Mordechai is summoned to the king and sent out on the horse, right? So just in terms of what was going on, the ping pong was very confusing, right? The Jewish people are decreed to be killed. Mordechai is being named as a capital enemy. Haman had gone to have him. Now just think of the people who are observing what's going on. The next thing you know, Haman is leading Mordechai on a horse through the streets of Shushan. What message did this give to the Jewish people? The message that it gave to the Jewish people in the middle of the tefillah swar, Rabboisai, keep it up because there's what to daven for. See, on the one hand, you have the intensity and the desperation. On the other hand, you can also have the despair. What's the point? It's how on earth can we try to imagine anything turning around? So right in the middle of the tefillahs, you have Mordechai, and then Mordechai gets off, and what does he do when he gets off the horse? He gets right back into the sackle. He's back into this medrash and saying, Rabboisai, step it up, step it up. But here it's with another message. We're getting there. We're getting there. Look, Hashem is starting to respond. Right? This is not hopeless. This gave them that next right? To take it all the way. And this was what the Jewish people experienced. It was now seeing how this was all Hashem behind it all, and how the spiritual response, remaining connected to the spiritual dynamic, was actually what led them out of it. And all the people with their ideas of having to connect properly to the Persian Empire, etc., they found themselves helpless. There was nothing they could do to better the situation. Who, yes? The one who got them in trouble in the first place with his niece. The family who doesn't get it, right? Now, the rest, all the people who did get it are helpless, have nothing to do about it, and it's Mordechai and Esther who have to guide it and call the shots. As we said last week, this was a very impactful experience in the Jewish people moving into a position where they were able to now subjugate themselves to the guidance of Chachmei HaTorah. This was a major point here. Mordechai here, up till then the Jewish people were accustomed to operating by the word of Nevuah. Here it's Mordechai operating according to his spiritual sensitivities and Chachmas HaTorah. That's what it was. This wasn't Nevuah. And this was very important to lead the people into the second Beis HaMikdash, because that would be the new period now. There isn't going to be Nevuah now. They got this experience of seeing where that got them, and that's the Kibul v'Kiblu. They were now able to be Mekabel the Torah as in, we're going to be Mekabel the guidance of the Chachmei HaTorah. We're not being guided now by the live word of Nevuah. We're being guided by Torah made live by its live carriers, by the people who are saturated with Torah sensitivities. And we have to rely on their sensitivities to help us navigate any situation, including life in general.
So he says to Esther, don't fantasize. Yeshua will come from another place and maybe you won't be alive. You don't want to go to the king now. We're going to be saved, but you get to choose whether to play your role in it or not, basically. So, and again, that goes back to the getting the message from the children that the outcome's going to be okay. So then what how do you know that the reaction of the people made a difference? In other words, if Yeshua is going to come, whether a Jew or somebody else,
okay.
You get
The question
both.
here is, Mordechai already heard that the outcome was going to be okay. And in Kaveh's test, there is Atzala coming, right? So, if so, where did the whole process of the fasting come in? The answer is, he didn't get a Nevuah saying in an absolute way. He was shown there's hope ahead. But it had to go through that process. And that's what he was telling Esther. He was telling Esther, the process is going to have to happen now. I'm going to whip the Jewish people into that tefillah and tshuva. The question is, do you want to be the material catalyst? Or are you going to step aside? It's going to come. If the Jewish people are going to be involved in that process, it's going to come. She responded, as she should have responded. Some of Farshim actually end with this. Some of Farshim actually say that she knew all this also. She wanted Mordechai to be with the Jewish people and feeling the desperation. That's why she said, I don't know, this, that. But that's what some of the Farshim say. But she was planning on doing it. But she wanted him to be davening desperately. But he came back and told her, no, this is not happening. She said, okay, fine. Mordechai is going to have to be part of the plot. Okay, Bezos Hashem, we should be zeichet to internalize these messages and live them, Bezos Hashem, and take see Hashem's Yeshua and rejoice in his full Yeshua this Sunday, Bezos Hashem.
Thank you.
No
class next week.
Come to you. Come to you.
Did we say
I'm sorry, just give me a moment.